సహ నో భునక్తు సహ వీర్యం కరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్తు మా విద్విషావహై. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. ఓం పూర్ణమద పూర్ణమిదం పూర్ణాత్ పూర్ణముదచ్యతే పూర్ణస్య పూర్ణమాదాయ పూర్ణమేవావశిష్యతే. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. శ్రుతిస్మృతిపురాణానాం ఆలయం కరుణాలయం నమామి భగవత్పాదం శంకరం లోకశంకరం శంకరం శంకరాచార్యం కేశవం బాదరాయణం సూత్రభాష్యకృతౌ వందే భగవంతౌ పునః పునః. ఈశ్వరో గురురాత్మేది మూర్తిభేద విభాగినే వ్యోమవద్వ్యాప్తదేహాయ దక్షిణామూర్తయే. ఓం పార్శాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవతా నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణమునినా మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణీం భగవతీం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినీం అంబత్వామనుసందధామి భగవత్ గీతే భవద్వేషిణీ యం బ్రహ్మా వరుణేంద్ర రుద్ర మరుతః స్తున్వంతి దివ్యైస్తవైః వేదైః సాంగపదక్రమోపనిషదైః గాయంతి యం సామగాః ధ్యానావస్థితతద్గతేన మనసా పశ్యంతి యం యోగినః యశ్యాంతన్న విదుసురగణాః దేవాయ తస్మై నమః. సో వి ఆర్ బిగినింగ్ ది 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It is called the Purushottama Yoga, where Lord Krishna unfolds the nature of Purushottama. Purushaha, the one that is Purnaha, the complete or whole, is called Purushaha. Also Purishayana, the one who is the self of all, is also called Purushaha, or the self of the universe, self of the individuals, is called Purushaha. In Paramatma, Ishvara or Parambrahma. And this 15th chapter, a short chapter of just 20 verses, Lord Krishna at the end calls it Shastram. Hey Arjuna, I have told you the Shastra. Etat buddhva buddhiman syat, knowing which one becomes really intelligent in the right sense. Krita krityascha bharata, knowing which one gains a complete fulfillment in life. It is a chapter of 20 verses, which is a complete chapter. Shastra involves, or Shastra includes, all the aspects that are required for a seeker of moksha. This chapter begins with a discussion of vairagya, dispassion, in order to explain to us who is adhikari, what sort of qualifications one should gain in order to gain this knowledge. Because every kind of knowledge requires its preparation. So what kind of preparation is required? for this knowledge of Purushottama, knowledge of Parambrahma. And then going to the teacher, having gained the qualification, one should go to the teacher, sit at the feet of the teacher, and listen to the unfoldment of the scriptures from the lips of the teacher. And then should carry out shravanam, mananam, nidhyasanam. That's called vicharaha, an inquiry or investigation in the nature of the Mahavakya. So this short chapter unfolds Mahavakya, meaning the profound statement which reveals the identity of Jiva and Ishvara. So in 5 verses, Lord Krishna talks about the Jiva. Then 4 verses, Lord Krishna talks about Ishvara. Then other 3 verses, Lord Krishna talks about the identity between the two. At the end, Jivan Muktaha, the one who is liberated while living. So all the aspects of Vedanta are covered in this. So, Guhyatamam Shastram Idamuktam Mayanaka. Hey Arjuna, I have told you the most secret Shastra, which includes all the aspects of Vedanta. Therefore, this chapter of 20 verses is called Shastra. Because the whole Bhagavad Gita is Shastra, but this chapter touches upon all the aspects of this Shastra. Therefore, it is also called Shastra or Scripture. Therefore, a very important chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. All chapters are important, but then some chapters are more profound than others. In that sense, this chapter is a very profound chapter. It is the Jnana Yoga, talks about Jnanam, or the knowledge. The previous chapter, the 14th chapter, there Lord Krishna described Gunatita, one who has transcended gunas or the qualities. We were told that our personality is made up of the 3 gunas or the three dispositions, sattva, rajas and tamas. And this whole samsara, the universe, our personality, all our experiences, all our life is within the realm of these 3 gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. In fact, this whole universe also is a manifestation of these 3 gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. Our personality also, consisting of the body, mind, sense organs also, is a manifestation of 3 gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. Our mind also, with its variety of thoughts, is also a manifestation of 3 gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. So this is one model of explaining our life. It is made up of 3 gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. And we are all involved in that. We are all entangled in that. An ignorant person is entangled in these 3 gunas. Gunatitaha, one who transcends the 3 gunas, one recognizes that one is in fact beyond these 3 gunas. Nanyam gunebhyah kartaram yada drashtanu pashyati. Lord Krishna says that all actions are performed not by Atma, not by the Self. All actions are performed by this Prakriti consisting of 3 gunas. The Kartrutva, Hoktrutva, the doership, the enjoyership, all of this belongs to the 3 gunas. Nanyam gunebhyah kartaram yada drashtanu pashyati. When drashta the seer sees this fact, that all actions are performed not by Self, they are all performed by Prakriti, they are performed by these 3 gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, performed by the mind. All actions are performed by the mind, made of these 3 gunas. Gunebhyascha param drashtya param, and also sees that I am the witness of the 3 gunas. I am the witness of the 3 gunas, where kartrutva, bhoktrutva, the whole samsara is there. I am not part of samsara, I am the witness of samsara. So this is the gunatita. One who recognizes that this whole universe and the whole life is nothing but a play of prakriti or maya, consisting of three gunas, and that I am untouched by the Maya. I am not a witness of the Maya. I am the one that imparts the consciousness to Maya. It is because of I that everything is. So one who recognizes this is gunatita, the wise person. This was the subject matter of the previous chapter. Then Lord Krishna made a very interesting statement. Mam chayo vyavicharena bhakti yogena sevate. One who worships me with the yoga of devotion, by my grace, by worshipping Ishvara, we receive the grace of Ishvara. So by my grace, he becomes fit for this knowledge, and by my grace, gains this knowledge and becomes liberated. So Lord Krishna presented all of a sudden in this chapter towards the end, Lord Krishna said, Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. So one sevate, one who worships me with bhakti, with devotion. Sagunan samaditaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. He transcends the three gunas and becomes one with Brahma. So, beginning the discussion of this chapter, Shankaracharya says that if by grace of God one can gain the knowledge and one can gain moksha, then what to talk of a person who directly knows the truth of the self? And therefore, the 15th chapter is begun on the part of Lord Krishna himself with a desire to unfold the nature of the reality, nature of the truth, nature of the self. However, Lord Krishna begins not by describing the nature of self. Lord Krishna begins by elaborately describing the nature of samsara, nature of this life of becoming. Lord Krishna describes that. So the question arises, how come Lord Krishna begins with a description of samsara rather than a description of the self? So the description of samsara is there in order for us to understand what is the nature of samsara and thus to discover a dispassion, vairagya. So as we said, this chapter begins by describing the adhikari, meaning who is the person who is qualified for the knowledge. The person becomes qualified for knowledge, becomes qualified for devotion, qualified for any spiritual pursuit, when the person has his attention focused inward rather than outward. Usually a person's focus is on the outward, the world that is outside of himself, because of the conclusion that what I want is out there in the world. What I want is happiness, and happiness is out there in the world, in the objects of the world, in the achievements of the world, in the accomplishments of the world. This being the conclusion, it is natural that the person is always looking out at the world towards the desirable objects, desirable achievements, desirable accomplishments. This is where a person's attention is. This may be called extrovertedness. The person's attention is always outside. The world creates in him a desire to acquire, achieve and enjoy. This is a relation to the world we have at this time, or an ignorant person has. I should not say we, because, you know. But an ignorant person has. Because of the conclusion, because of the wrong conclusion about the life, nothing else. It is nobody's fault that a person is what he or she is. A person is what the conclusions are. And we are born with certain conclusions.
That is the result of ignorance. We are born with ignorance.
It is not our fault that we are ignorant.
Ignorance is.
And why is ignorance is? There is no answer to that question. It just is. So whoever is born ignorant. And this ignorance is twofold. One is not knowing the true nature of reality. And the other is having false notions about the reality. The ignorance has two aspects. Ignorance is not merely the absence of knowledge, but it is wrong knowledge or false knowledge. And that is what is the cause of all our suffering. Not just the absence of knowledge, but the wrong knowledge or the false knowledge which results into this wrong or false conclusions. For example, I am born with ignorance of myself, meaning that I do not know the true nature of myself, even as I am born. On the top of that, I am born with the wrong notion about who I am. If I just did not know anything about the self, perhaps that may not have been so bad, but I'm born with the false notions about myself as to who I am. Not only do I not know that I, the self, is eternal. Atma, the self, the consciousness, is nitya, is eternal. It's beyond the effect of time and space and everything. So not only do I not know that I am eternal, but then I take myself to be mortal, quite contrary to what I am. These conclusions are a problem. There is no other problem at all, that's what Vedanta says. No problem is, there is no other cause of suffering. There may be worldly situations and problems may be there, or poverty may be there, illiteracy, these kind of problems may be there. But those situations need not cause any suffering, any mental suffering. The only cause of mental suffering are these false notions. That I am mortal. That I am subject to birth and death. Now this is something that I cannot accept about myself. Because it is quite contrary to what I truly am. That I am eternal in nature, I am immortal in nature, and I think that I am a mortal being. Thus, I look upon myself as quite contrary to what I truly am, and therefore I am not comfortable with myself. Atma, the self, is knowledge by nature, consciousness, knowledge by nature, and I look upon myself as an ignorant being, again quite contrary to what I am. And thirdly, ananda or happiness is my nature. And I look upon myself as dukkhi, as a sorrowful or unhappy being. The one who is happiness in nature looks upon the self as unhappy. The one who is immortal in nature looks upon the self as mortal. The one who is knowledge in nature looks upon self as ignorant. Why is it so? That's what it is. Vedanta explains, of course, why it is so. That you look upon this body as a self, and the body is subject to birth and death, and you look upon yourself as subject to birth and death, so that's the cause, identifies the body. Mind, sense complex, creates all these false notions of complexes. There is birth someplace, no doubt. There is birth and death and change someplace, but not where I think it is. In the body, there is birth and death and change constantly, and I look upon myself as body, which is a wrong thing. I am not the body. That is what will be taught. There is ignorance in the intellect, but I am not the intellect. There may be sorrow in the mind, I am not sorrow, I am not the mind. On account of looking upon this body, mind, sense complex, the self, all these various complexes are created in me and I am suffering from that. So this is the cause of suffering, that's what Vedanta says. There is no other cause of suffering. Neither the spouse is cause of suffering, nor children are cause of suffering, nor parents, nor neighbors, nor bosses, nor colleagues, nor subordinates, nobody. Neither birth, nor death, nor gain, nor loss, nor success, or failure, or honor, or dishonor, nothing can need be the cause of sorrow. That's what Lord Krishna said about the wise person. Mana apamana yostulyaha tulyo mitrari pakshayoho. Mana apamana yostulyaha, the one who has this knowledge. For that person, mana and apamana, honor and dishonor are the same, meaning that he is unaffected by honor and dishonor. Recognizing that honor also belongs to the upadhi, dishonor also belongs to the upadhi, that I am unaffected by them, I am the witness of both. Sama dukkha sukha svastaha sama loshtashma kanchanaha. Sama dukkha sukha, in pleasure and pain, he maintains, he enjoys an equanimity of mind in pleasure and pain, in what is favorable or unfavorable. Sama loshtashma kanchanaha, in his perception, a clod of earth, a stone, gold, all of these are the same value, meaning that nothing attracts him, nor anything repels him. He is free from attraction and repulsion with reference to anything. This is ideally how it should be. Tulya priya priyodira tulya nindatma samstutihi, whether there is praise or censure. Whether somebody is dear or not, he is the same. Doesn't mean that he is totally insensitive, no. We think that the fellow is insensitive. He has no emotion at all. He is same to everything. Nothing touches him. That must be very boring. But no, he transcends these things. He abides in something that is beyond this worldly likes and dislikes, worldly pleasure and pain, worldly honor and dishonor. Because a person who finds happiness in honor is going to find unhappiness in dishonor. A person who finds happiness in success is going to find unhappiness in failure. For this person, success is neither a source of joy nor a failure a source of sorrow. He abides in the ananda or happiness which is his own self, unaffected by any external situation. That's the idea. He lives in the world like we live, but at the same time he is totally unaffected by any kind of exigencies of the world. So that is called freedom. Freedom is not being influenced or affected by anything, maintaining your fullness. Gunayo na vichalyate. Udasina vadasina gunayo na vichalyate. The one who knows this honor also is a play of this maya, the dishonor also is a play of maya. Imagine yourself acting in a play, and then in the play you are subjected to honor. Do you feel honored? You know that this is just play. Or suppose you are insulted, you don't feel insulted in the drama because you know that this is just a play. Of course, if there is somebody who takes that play too seriously and takes it real, then of course he will be affected. It can happen once in a while. When the person acting as a beggar forgets that I am an actor and becomes a real beggar in the play. And when somebody insults him back. That's called reaction, because he is no more playing the role, he has become the role. So that's called a samsari,
who has become the role and therefore reacting to everything, you know, which only belongs at the level of role, but then he superimposes upon himself and thinks that these are all happening to me. So just as for a person who is playing a role in a drama, how the honor and dishonor, how the success and failure, how the gain and loss, how the friend and foe, how none of them affects him because of knowledge. How come he is not affected? Because of knowledge. Knowledge of who I truly am. He realizes that all this honor and dishonor, all of this is only at the level of my role, as a costume. Somebody insults the beggar, not the person, but the costume that is a beggar. He knows. So when there is thus the awareness of true nature of oneself, how one becomes free from the effects of the samsara, which is of the nature of the dvandva or pairs of opposites. So this world consists of dvandva or pairs of opposites. Nothing is ever the same. Like a wheel that goes down and goes up. Niche hi gacchati uparicha dasha. Chakra naimikramena, like a chakra or a wheel goes down and up also. Constantly there is a change. Now there is failure, then there is success. Now there is dishonor, then there is honor. Now there is loss, then there is gain. And the ignorant person keeps on swinging. So as the situations change, this person keeps on reacting to situation and thus keeps on swinging along with the situation. Can never enjoy any peace of mind. Cannot enjoy a steadiness of the mind. So this is what basically Bhagavad Gita teaches, Vedanta teaches. So in order to be aware of who my true nature, what my true nature is, it is necessary that my mind should be focused inward and not outward. So look at that actor. Even though he is acting very effectively, his role, whatever the role is given to him or her, how at the same time how that person is conscious of the self, conscious of the true nature of the self. So one part of the mind is directed inward, is constantly aware of the self. As Ramakrishna Paramahamsa used to give an example of this maiden who goes for fetching water from the village well and returns with one vessel upon the other and then one in the hand. So one pot upon the other pot and one pot in the hand, and then she returns, balancing these pots. And then comes across from the other side her friend, and she stops. And they start talking. But then while talking, and perhaps some movements also may take place of the body, that is, these parts are always balanced. They don't fall down. Because a part of our mind is engaged in balancing these parts. Similarly, a part of the mind of the actor is engaged in recognizing or being aware of his true nature. And so also a wise person's mind is always conscious of the true nature. Guna vartante udasina vadasina gunairyogana vichalyate. He is like udasina, unaffected, unconnected, uninvolved. While being involved, he remains uninvolved. Understand this. Uninvolved does not mean that he doesn't do anything. He may not do anything, but he may as well do a lot of things. But still, as far as he is concerned, he is not doing anything. Udasina vadasina gunairyona vichalyate. Who is not unseated or not uprooted from his being, from his knowledge. He abides in the knowledge. Guna vartante, this is all the play of the guna. So this is how the wise person was described, and this is the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita. But for that knowledge, one requires a certain disposition of mind. In Vedanta, it is called Antahkarana Shuddhi, the purity of the mind. What is purity? What is impurity of the mind? The raga dveshas, the likes and dislikes, are the impurities of the mind. Because why impurity? Because mind inherently is pure. Mind is a product of sattva. Sattvam nirmalatvat prakashakam anamayam. Sattvam is nirmalam. It is free from any impurity. It is ever pure. Prakashakam illumining. Anamayam, free from any unhappiness. This is the nature of the mind. Our mind by nature is pure, of the nature of happiness, cheerfulness. Cheerfulness without any reason. The mind is cheerful by nature, pure by nature, calm by nature, composed by nature. Like water, which is pure by nature. And any impurity is only a agantuka, is something that is incidental. Similarly also, the impurities in the mind are incidental, not inherent nature of the mind. Therefore, just as it is possible to filter out the impurities from water and again bring the water to its state of purity, so also it is possible to remove these impurities from the mind and bring it back to its state of purity. So this must be very comforting, that all impurities such as anger and greed and jealousies, all of these are called impurities of the mind, that all of these are incidental. They are not the inherent nature of the mind. In that way also we can create a distance. Whenever the mind feels jealousy because of its habit, looks at somebody else, thinks of somebody who has achieved more than myself, automatically there is jealousy habitually. At that time I can remind myself that jealousy is not only not nature of mind, atma, it is not even nature of mind also. It is incidental. I need not be affected by that. So this kind of thoughts, such as anger, they can arise only because of the past habits, past samskara, the past impressions. This kind of reactions arise in the mind. We need not identify with them. We can create a distance and say that not only I am not the anger, even anger is also not the nature of mind. Endeavor to make the mind free. But we want ultimately that anger should not arise. Jealousy should not arise. So that our mind is undisturbed. It is not so much the external world that disturbs our mind, it is these internal impulses which disturb the mind more than anything else. The external world manages to cause disturbance in the mind only because of the inner impulses. Because the raga dveshas, the likes and dislikes. Because the likes and dislikes are there in the mind, therefore, the external situations create reactions in me. Otherwise they need not. So the first thing to do is make the mind free from raga and dvesha, likes and dislikes. This state of mind which is free from likes and dislikes is called vairagyam. Viragasya bhavaha vairagyam. The state of viraga is called vairagya. What is viraga? Vigataha, ragaha, yasmatsaha, viraga. So that from which the raga or attachment is gone away. And dvesha, aversion also is gone away. That state of mind from which attachment and aversion have gone away. That state of mind is called vairagya or dispassion. Raga and dvesha are passion, simple this. The mind is free from impulses. It enjoys a calmness, enjoys composure, enjoys an inwardness. For creating vairagya, Lord Krishna opens 15th chapter with discussion of samsara. If you understand the true nature of samsara, then it will be possible to discover a vairagya or dispassion. We should understand that this samsara is mithya. It is not real. Understanding the unreality will enable us to become detached from it. I am attached because I give reality to things. I give reality to the happiness which appears to come from the objects. I give reality to unhappiness which appears to come from the objects. When I realize that's not the case. Therefore, understanding the nature of samsara also is important. So let us read the first verse of this chapter.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Urdhvamulamadhashakam Ashvattham Prahuravyayam Chandam Siyasya Paranani Yastam Vedasa Vedavita. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Lord said, the usual custom is that the disciple asks the question and the teacher replies. That's the usual custom. But sometimes the teacher, out of his own anxiousness or his own concern about the student, starts giving the discourse. So a teacher does not always wait for a question from the disciple. But the teacher understands the question that may have arisen in the mind of the disciple, or a question that should arise, and wants a disciple to start thinking. So Lord Krishna, of course, knows what it is that Arjuna should know. As he said, the earlier chapter described the wise person who has transcended the three attributes. We said how he is always aware of the true nature of his self in all variety of situations, therefore unaffected by them, and be happy. Let us put it in a simple way. When you can enjoy everything, put it this way. A wise person can enjoy everything. We can enjoy success, but failure is so difficult to enjoy. Honor I can enjoy, dishonor I can't enjoy. Can you imagine a state of mind, wisdom, where dishonor is equally enjoyable to honor? Is it possible? As we said, an actor can enjoy everything. An actor who has taken the role of a beggar and is aware of his own identity. As a beggar, he may be subjected to dishonor also, but he enjoys that. He knows that this is not real. So knowing that as unreal, you can enjoy it knowing that it is not real. Just as when we stand in front of a concave mirror, a huge concave mirror where I may look so fat and chubby.
I enjoy my own reflection,
knowing that it is mithya, it is unreal. If I thought that I really become like that, there is no way I can enjoy.
So enjoyment is not because necessarily my desire is satisfied. Happiness is not because my desire is necessarily satisfied. Happiness is because happiness is my nature. If I'm aware of the fact that happiness is my nature, then gunairyona vichalyate. He is not unseated or uprooted from his knowledge by the events in the world, because know that this is all drama. You can call it mithya or unreal, or you can call it a play. So how an actor, knowing that an insult also is unreal, can equally enjoy that insult, equally enjoy a failure, equally enjoy a loss, equally enjoy everything, because it is unreal. So also knowing all gain and loss, success and failure, honor and dishonor, friend and foe, all of these are unreal. So Lord Krishna wants to describe the unreality of the world. Knowing the unreal is unreal, you become free from any attachment. Attachment can be there, provided I give something, some reality to something. When can something make me happy? When I think that that object is, I give it a reality, and happiness appearing to come from that also is given reality. Similarly, when I give something a reality, it can make me unhappy also. But knowing it is unreal, neither gives me happiness or unhappiness, meaning it does not disturb my abiding in myself. This is happiness. So a good way of describing wise person's state of mind is that he enjoys everything as a play of Ishvara, as a play of his own self. And a person, even without the knowledge, even if you have vairagya or dispassion, you can pretty well enjoy it. Not as much as a wise person, but pretty much. When I don't react to things, when I'm able to take things in their own stride, when I can realize that, okay, gain and loss both are realities of life, so what's the big deal? You know, like a wheel, they come and go. Something has come, it will go. For me, what if it doesn't go? Well, suddenly the uncanny nature of coming and not going, other things that go and then never come back. The true refuge is only in our own nature. Knowing that regardless of what the external situation is, I am what I am. What I am is unaffected by what is out there. So that is why being aware of oneself and being rooted in the self is so important. As long as the person is rooted in the samsara, he can never be happy. Or he can be happy, but then Swami says, dukkham, 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 sukham, dukkham, 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 sukham. If dukkham and sukham were equal, then also is okay, but that's not the case. Because unfortunately, what is sukham right now has the ability to become dukkham later on, because my expectations keep on increasing. So when a chicken gives eggs, then I want more and more, and a golden egg, I want more and more of them. Not satisfied with what I have. So the very same thing can become cause of dukkham later on, under different conditions. So unreality of the world is, what is the intention of describing this tree of samsara? We are all familiar with the 15th chapter. As you know, it is chanted before the meals.
And I'm sure many of you have it, you know, by heart. So here, Lord Krishna compares the world, the samsara, with the tree. And this is traditional also. It is not something of, I mean, not this imagery is not something of Lord Krishna's original. He takes it from the Upanishad. The Kathopanishad says, Urdvamulah avakshakah esho shvathas sanatanah. Kathopanishad says, Urdvamulah avakshakah esha ashvathah sanatanah. This ashvatha tree is there, this peepal tree is there. Sanatanah, ever is eternal, ever going. This tree is compared to samsara, and what, I mean samsara compared to tree, what kind of tree? Peepal tree. Ashvatha, peepal tree. So here also Lord Krishna, ashvattham. Ashvastha. A means, a is a negative particle, not. Shvas means tomorrow. Stha, sa means tishthati. So there is a question whether this will be there tomorrow or not. Ashvattha. Ashvas and stha. Ashvatta. Stha. Stha means to be. Shvas means tomorrow. A means not. Ashvatta. That which will not be even tomorrow. There is a question whether this will be there tomorrow or not. Meaning that this will not be there tomorrow in future. It is constantly changing. It is constantly undergoing change, undergoing in fact a destruction. It is being destroyed even as I see it. Drashta nashta svabhavaha. It is transient. It is changing. It is mortal. It is perishable. Ashvatha means what is perishable. Which is a great comfort or solace, that this tree of samsara. So this samsara is like a tree which is perishable. Vrashanat vrukshah. The word vruksha is derived from the root vrash. Vrashanat vrukshah. So that which can be felled is called tree. So this is a good thing. Samsara is compared to tree because it is constantly changing. Many of you may have seen this peepal tree. Peepal tree has large leaves, large and long leaves. So the leaves are quite heavy, and the branches also cannot quite carry that weight of the leaves. Therefore, the branches also are bending down under the weight of the leaves. And also because the leaves are large, whenever the breeze comes, the leaves keep on sort of fluttering, flittering. So if you go near the ashvatha tree, the peepal tree, usually there is always some sound coming from that because of the trees, because of the leaves sort of rubbing against each other, and they create this little sound, and so it is a tree that causes sound. And particularly at night, you know, it is very scary. In villages, from one village to other, you are traveling at night in darkness. And passing by this ashvatha tree, and then you hear this kind of sounds coming from there, you think that there is a ghost in there. So many people believe that ashvatha tree, in the peepal tree, there is a ghost. They don't want this tree in their house. That's one way of looking at the tree. Other way of looking at the tree is it is considered ficus religiosa. It is a ficus, is a tree of the fig family. Like the banyan tree also is a ficus tree. And so also this peepal tree is ficus tree. ficus religiosa. It is a religious tree. And in a way, so in the people tree, we believe that it is Ishvara who dwells in that, Vasudeva, dwells in all the parts of the people tree. So that's the reason why people go and worship this tree. Ashvatha Saravrukshana. The 10th chapter, Lord Krishna, while describing his glories, said that, I am the Ashvatha tree, people tree, among all the trees. Because it is a tree which is said to be the dwelling place of Vasudeva, of Lord. Etat brahmavanam cheva brahma charita nityashah. So this is where Brahma or Ishvara dwells. He lives in there and dwells in this tree, in all the parts of the tree. Many of you may have gone to the, many of you may worship this tree also. Women generally go and then take rounds around this tree, pour water at the root. Have you seen that? Because the root there is Brahma. In the trunk there is Vishnu. In the leaves there is Shiva. So in the root you pour the water. But Brahma is a creator. So those who wish to have children, you know, they worship that. They do that. Or otherwise also they do. Because it is a tree which is considered to be the dwelling place of the Lord. Ashvattham. So on one hand, the meaning of word Ashvattha is that which is impermanent, which is transient, which is perishable. But then Lord Krishna says, Avyayam, the Kathopanishad Sanatanah. Lord Krishna says, Avyayam. Avyayam is imperishable. Ashvattha means perishable. Avyayam means imperishable. This tree is perishable as well as imperishable both. How can it be? How can the very same thing be perishable as well as imperishable? With knowledge it becomes perishable. In ignorance it is imperishable. So as long as ignorance is, so long the tree will perpetuate. The tree will never get destroyed by itself. The tree is a pretty long life. And if any natural calamity does not come, then the tree is, you know, persists for a long time. And particularly for the Ashvatha tree, the way the tree spreads is it has this little fruits. The fig tree, you know, so the figs are the fruits. And the birds eat those figs. And their excreta, you know, there are the seeds that are actually transmitted by the birds. And that's how the tree grows. In India, this peepal tree grows just anywhere. It comes out of the walls, comes out of the roofs. Because these birds, when they throw their excreta, then that contains the seeds from that fruit. And that is where a new tree comes. In that sense also it perpetuates. Even if a particular tree perhaps gets destroyed, then also it is already the cause of many other trees. In that sense, the tree is avyayam, imperishable. How long is imperishable? As long as it is ignorance. So understand that this tree of samsara is a product of ignorance. And as long as the ignorance is there, so long the tree will perpetuate. The tree will not die by itself, will not get destroyed on its own. It has to be destroyed by us. The third verse will tell us that Asanga Shastrena Drudena Chitva has to be cut asunder by the weapon of the Asanga or the Vairagya. But the sword of Vairagya, it has to be cut asunder. So inasmuch as it can be cut asunder by the sword of knowledge, it is perishable. But inasmuch as in ignorance it will perpetuate, it is called imperishable also.
So both these adjectives are used for this tree in this very first line. Urdhamulam, adashakam, ashvattham, prahuhu, avyayam. So Lord Krishna says prahuhu. What is prahuhu? Prahu means they say. See how humble, what a humility in Lord Krishna. He does not proclaim this to be his idea. He does not proclaim this to be his teaching either. He prides in saying that he is a part of that same parampara. Of course, he is the one who has initiated this parampara or this tradition. But there is a succession of the teacher and the disciple, and in this succession, this knowledge is coming down to us through the time beginningless. Imam vivasvate yogam proktavan ham avyayam. Lord Krishna said in the fourth chapter that, hey Arjuna, the knowledge that I imparted to you is what I imparted to Vivasvan, to Lord Sun, in the beginning of creation. Evam parampara praptam. That this knowledge is coming down to us in succession. So Lord Krishna believes in parampara. He believes in guru shishya parampara, this succession of the teacher and the student. Meaning thereby the knowledge should necessarily come from a teacher. Because student is ignorant. And there is no way that the ignorant person will ever recognize this truth about himself, because he only taken for granted as to who I am. Like the tenth man, who has taken for granted that the tenth man is lost. I am not the tenth man. The tenth man is lost. And with this notion about his own self, they are all searching with the tenth man. Where the person who is searching himself is the tenth man. He is searching his own self. That's what ignorance does. And there's no way that he will ever think that I am the tenth man. What should happen for him to think that I am the tenth man? In fact, more he searches, more he does not discover, more he thinks that he is lost. His conclusion that tenth man is lost becomes more and more confounded if he does not find him. So he needs to be told. Only when someone comes along and says, you are the tenth man, that is when a tube light will happen in his mind. In India, there are those fluorescent lights which take a time, you switch on, takes a little while, you know, it comes out like this and then finally it starts illuminating. Now, of course, that's not the case because now we have the kind of starters that these tube lights also come out immediately. But in the olden days, so they used to use the expression tube light. When it doesn't become clear right away, a person takes a little while in understanding. So you are the tenth man, must have taken a little while for this fellow to understand. What do you mean? I am the tenth man. Then again, how can I be tenth man? Again you count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. See, there are 9. How can I be tenth man? Hey, you are the tenth man. You are not counting yourself. You need somebody to point this out. Because he is quite firm in his conclusion that I am not the tenth man. And nothing that will happen out there will ever create in him this enlightenment that I should be tenth man. Because I don't find the tenth man there, why should I be tenth man? No, because I don't find tenth, so he must be somewhere else. I don't find him there, so he must be somewhere else. So the search will perfect, the tree of samsara will perpetuate. So that's called samsara. On the part of tenth man, this searching for the tenth man is called samsara, which is product of ignorance, will persist as long as ignorance persists. But then it is tree, it can be felled by the sword of knowledge. What's the knowledge? You are the tenth man. So ashvattham, avyayam, simultaneously perishable, imperishable, but perishable. Perishable and also imperishable.
ఊర్ధ్వమూలం అధశాఖం అశ్వత్థం ప్రాహు అవ్యయం ప్రాహు. దేశే సో లార్డ్ కృష్ణ డ్రాస్ ఫ్రమ్ అదర్ సోర్సెస్ హియర్ ఐ సేడ్ ఫ్రమ్ కఠోపనిషత్. Even Lord Krishna also does not have any hesitation in admitting that this is a knowledge that he has gained from the tradition of the teachers. You don't feel in any way low or inferior because you gained this knowledge from the teacher. No student feels inferior. Or no teacher feels inferior because every teacher also was a student at some time. And in many places, Lord Krishna says like this, this is what they say. This is what they say. Even Upanishad also at one place mentions. Iti shushramadhiranam ye nastad vite chakshire. Even teacher Upanishad says, iti shushramadhiranam, this is what we have listened to from the wise people who unfolded it to us in this manner. There's a great respect for the Guru Shishya Parampara, for the tradition of succession of the teacher to the student. So in Rishikesh they will ask you, when you're asking for your introduction, you know, who are you? Who is your teacher? It's a very important thing they're asking. If you don't have a teacher, get lost. So people pride that my teacher is so and so. So student also feels a little big because of the bigness of the teacher, I guess. Rahu Abhyayam. And here, Vashyakara also quotes a description from Mahabharata where this tree of samsara is described. So we'll continue our discussion after a break. Come back by 11:35. Okay?